Welcome on into the Jazz Talk Podcast. I'm your host, CJ Dieters. We have a lot to get into. We're going to talk about the draft, the three guys that the Jazz have added. We're going to talk about the trade that the Jazz executed yesterday. And we're going to talk about the future as the Jazz get closer to the start of free agency. Begins on Friday, June 30th, I believe. They have started at, I believe, like 8 Eastern. Not exactly sure on that, but it starts Friday night, which is a nice switch from when it used to start at like midnight Saturday morning, because if you wanted to see where guys were signing, you had to stay up late, and you're staying up till 2, 3 o'clock until all the madness ended. But anyway, before we talk about the guys that the Jazz drafted, it's really relevant that I just tell you that in the trade, the Jazz picked up John Collins. We'll get more into the trade in the second segment, but it's very important that for the discussion part of the draft, that you know that John Collins is now a member of the Utah Jazz. So, the Jazz went into the draft with 9, 16, and 28. Now, I believed that you could use those picks in trades, you know, that the Jazz had a lot of flexibility with what they could do. But I was not one of the many people that believed that there was zero way the Jazz were going to take all three of these picks. If the draft board fell the way they wanted it to, if the guys that they liked were available at 9, 16, and 28, I felt like there was a very good chance they would stay there, just take those guys and move forward. And that's what ended up happening. So at number 9, actually, before I bring that up, one thing I should point out is that the Jazz were really high on Bilal Coulibaly. The Pacers picking at 7 knew that both the Wizards and the Jazz really wanted Coulibaly. So what they did was they drafted him and talked to both teams, told the Wizards and the Jazz, like, hey, we're going to take Coulibaly. What are you willing to give us to get him? And both teams, you know, sent them, you know, trades involving their pick plus, you know, extra stuff. The Wizards ended up moving up one spot from 8 to 7 so that they could get Coulibaly from the Pacers. And they ended up sending out 2 future second round picks to get that done. So a great deal of work there by the Pacers, just going like, hey, we know both the teams right behind us want this guy. The guy that we want will still be available if we do trade down. So we're going to go get us, you know, some future assets to add to this team. So a great deal of work there by them. So then the Jazz were at 9, and they ended up taking Taylor Hendricks, power forward out of University of Central Florida. And apparently he was number 9 on the Jazz's draft board. So it kind of fell out perfectly for them. So if any of the guys taken before then had fallen down, I think they would have taken them instead. But I think Taylor Hendricks is a perfect fit for this Jazz team. 6'9", maybe 6'10", 7'3" wingspan. He is very athletic, but also extremely functionally athletic. Like, he knows how to use all that speed and power and jumping ability on the basketball court. Shot 39% from 3 at UCF this last year, and shot at a pretty good volume. Blocked a lot of shots, averaged over a block and a half a game. And I gotta tell you, if you are ever just bored looking for something fun to watch, trying to get excited about this next season for the Jazz, on YouTube, somebody made a video. Just put in on the search bar, Taylor Hendricks blocks. Somebody made a 7-minute video that is just all the blocks that Taylor Hendricks had this last year. It'll show you just how extremely athletic this kid is, and how scary him and Walker Kessler together could be. Now, it's really relevant, like I said before, the Jazz picked up John Collins. John Collins is going to be the starting power forward this year for the Jazz. And for whatever reason, once the Jazz made that trade, people were like, oh, they don't really believe in Taylor Hendricks. He's not going to be as good as, he's not going to be very good. They just kind of had to take him. No, the Jazz love Taylor Hendricks, but he's a rookie. He's 19 years old. He's going to need time. He's going to need time to mature. He's going to need time to build up his body. He's still pretty skinny. He's going to need time to get used to the NBA, to living in Utah, to the travel schedule, to the game schedule, to everything involved with being an NBA player. And he's still, I bet by the end of the year, by the time we get to game 82, he's going to be averaging somewhere around 22 to 26 minutes a game. Like, he's still going to get a lot of playing time. It's just going to be as the backup power forward. That's all I needed to say there with John Collins. We'll get into the trade there in a minute. I really think that Taylor Hendricks in a few years could be, a Jeremy Grant, Aaron Gordon, maybe even Draymond Green level contributor. He has different games than all those guys, but that level of power forward where you believe that you're really close, you add this guy in, and he could be the thing that really pushes you over the edge. The Nuggets had a really good team for a lot of years, but I think Aaron Gordon, along with like Bruce Brown, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope helped a lot too, but Aaron Gordon was really that missing piece that the Nuggets needed to really push them into championship contention. And Taylor Hendricks could be that piece for the Jazz as he matures and gets himself acclimated to the NBA. So then at 16, the guy that the Jazz had ranked 10th on their board was still available. And actually, they were debating on taking Hendricks or this guy at 9. They ended up getting him at 16, and that is Keyonte George, guard out of Baylor. Keyonte George is 6'4". Apparently now he's down to 185 pounds. He played at Baylor at 220, was at the combine, weighed in at 201, and I guess he's gotten himself down to 185 now, and that's where he's going to stay. He's going to start building back up his muscle from there. But at Baylor, they asked him to play basically the small forward, and they're in the Big 12, so he was going up against really big, well-built guys, and so he felt the need to put on the extra weight to help him hold up against, that heavier competition. With the Jazz, they believe he's a point guard. And I think that he could be bringing up the Nuggets again. I think he could be very similar to Jamal Murray. And that's something that Leif Thulin from the NBA Big Board has said, is that that's his comparison is Jamal Murray. Now, Keyonte George says he has built his game after like Bradley Beal. But I think Jamal Murray is the guy that he really should be looking towards, as he heads into the NBA and tries to become a point guard, who he should really be modeling his game after is Jamal Murray. Keyonte George has a beautiful shooting stroke. He has a little bit of iffy shot selection, and that's why his efficiency isn't great, because he, especially when he's wide open, he just drains shots like crazy. But he even makes a lot of contested shots. He's a good athlete. He's good on the defensive end. He's a fighter. He's 6'4", so it's not these 6'1" guards that the Jazz have been trying to work around defensively over the last few years. Now, Keyonte George, I think this year, especially with how crowded the backcourt is for the Jazz, now again, that could change. We'll get into that in the third section here today. But with how crowded the backcourt is, there's a good chance that Keyonte George spends some time with the Stars, with the Salt Lake City Stars, which is their G League team, just to really get a lot of time and experience in. And then maybe, similar to Ochai Agbaji this last year, barely plays any NBA minutes at the beginning of the year, plays a lot in the G League, But by the time you get to like game 40, game 45 of the year, he's ready to assume a role and take up some minutes. And then finally at pick 28, Justin Zanuck said that this guy was ranked 18th on their board heading into the draft, and so they were able to get him all the way down at 28, and that is Bryce Sensabaugh, small forward out of Ohio State. Sensabaugh is 6'6", 235. He is possibly the best shooter in this draft. There's some really good shooters, Jordan Hawkins, Grady Dick, Jet Howard, Keontae George, and Taylor Hendricks are also in that list. But where was I going with that? Sorry. Bryce Sensabaugh, great shooter, great in the mid-range, loves taking these tough contested shots. The guy that Leaf Tulane again compared him to that I really like this comparison is TJ Warren. TJ Warren had a really bad, I think he tore his ACL. So his last year wasn't a huge contributor, but was starting to become a very good, like, third or fourth best scorer on a team with the Suns and with the Pacers. Just a guy that, when you got into trouble, you could go to him and he could just go get a bucket. And that's who Bryce Sensabaugh is. I believe Bryce Sensabaugh, like Keontae George, will probably play the majority of the season with the Stars. He may even just play the whole season there and play very spot minutes in the NBA. He'll need time to really develop, refine his skill set, be better working off of the ball instead of having the ball in his hands a lot. But all three of these guys are 19 years old. All three were freshmen this last year. And they all three averaged over 15 points a game in the NCAA, which in the entire NCAA, there was only, I think, six players in the entire six freshmen that averaged over 15 points a game. Bryce Sensabaugh was the second leading scorer in all for all freshmen, right behind Brandon Miller, who was the second pick in the draft. So the Jazz added really good young talent that they can build over the next few years, and hopefully, by the time they're getting to, for Hendricks, probably year two, become a really big contributor. For George and Sensabaugh, probably year three is when you're expecting them to really step in and take a role. But by then, the Jazz could have a team that is really looking to push into playoffs and try and contend. So then we move on into the next section of today's episode, the John Collins trade. The Jazz have been talking with the Hawks for basically a year, ever since Danny Ainge took over the front office. They've been talking with the Hawks about trying to get John Collins from them. And they made it happen. The Hawks are now in a situation, they have a new GM, and they find themselves in a situation where they need to dump salary. They need to get off of money somehow, because with the new CBA, there's the new tax apron, the second tax apron, which they've put in a lot of penalties. If you go over that amount of money in salary, they put in a lot of penalties to really restrict teams, and it's basically designed to make it more fair to where you can't just buy yourself a championship, or and if you try to, it's going to be really, really hard to add to your team, no matter how willing you are to spend, because you're no longer going to have exceptions. You're no longer going to have draft picks to trade out, and if you do trade them out, they are immediately to the bottom of the draft. So, like a team like the Suns, they don't have any more draft picks available because they've traded all of them to get Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal. But say they wanted to trade for somebody and use a first round pick to do even if it's, 2031, so we'll give it a couple years when they actually have assets available to send out. If they're over that second apron, that 2031 pick, no matter what the Suns did that year, is immediately going to be at the very bottom of the draft. So let's say the Suns have really torn things down and you're the team's trading with them, and that pick should be like the eighth pick because the Suns are just no good anymore. It's going to be the 30th pick or the 29th or whatever. So now there's not really an incentive to trade with the Suns and take a first round pick back from them. There's other restrictions, but anyway, the Hawks really do not want to get to that second tax apron. And if they could, their ownership would prefer that they be out of the luxury tax altogether. Which opened up an opportunity for the Jazz to swoop in, because they have so much cap space going into this offseason where they could just basically absorb this contract. So the Hawks are sending John Collins to the Jazz. The Jazz are sending back Rudy Gay and a second round pick. That's it. That's all the Jazz had to send back to the Hawks to get this deal done. Rudy Gay has not been what the Jazz wanted him to be when they signed him to this 3-year contract. But if you could have told them that, hey, you're going to sign Rudy Gay to this, and after 2 years, you're going to turn him and a second round pick into John Collins, the front office of the Jazz would have told you that you're crazy. There's no way we're going to get John Collins for Rudy Gay, a 37-year-old Rudy Gay, and a second round pick. But the Jazz have made it happen now. Now, this trade will not be official until July 6th, because that's when the new league year starts, and that's when the Jazz will actually have this cap space to take him in. And the Hawks will actually be taking in Rudy Gay through a trade exception that they have after they traded away Justin Holiday. So I know this is geeky contract stuff, but by doing this, the Hawks will actually create a trade exception that is as large as John Collins's contract. So they'll have a trade exception that I think is 25.9 million instead of the about 19 million that would have been had it just been a straight trade. There we go. Again, I know most of you probably aren't following that. But for those of you that know salary cap and the collective bargaining agreement, it's actually kind of exciting stuff. So what are the Jazz getting in John Collins? So John Collins, oh my gosh. John Collins is 6'9", 226, power forward slash center. A few years ago, he averaged 21.6 points per game and over 10 rebounds. Over the last few years, especially this last year, he just hasn't fit what the Hawks have wanted to do. The way they run their team just has not been congruent to what John Collins is good at. And that's why I like him so much with the Jazz is Will Hardy's superpower is figuring out player superpower. He goes, okay, instead of going like, okay, how can I make this guy fit into what I do? He goes, okay, what is this guy amazing at? And what can I design to make that amazing skill pop out? He figured out with both Talen Horton-Tucker and Colin Sexton that they can get to the basket and get, and put the ball in the hole for a layup or for a dunk, basically anytime they want. And so he figured out how to run plays and get into the situation where those two guys could could capitalize on what they're great at. It wasn't, oh, Talen Horton Tucker's amazing at getting to the basket, but I want my point guards to shoot threes, so he's just going to shoot threes, and if he sucks at it, then he's just not going to play. That's not what Will Hardy does. He tries to figure out what he has on the roster and how he can maximize it. And so I'm really excited about John Collins being on this team because whether Jordan Clarkson's there or not, they're going to need that second or third scorer next to Lauri Markkanen. And I think John Collins can be either the second or third best scorer, depending on if Jordan Clarkson's still on the roster. This also, again, gives the Jazz time to develop Taylor Hendricks. He's not immediately being thrusted into the starting power forward position and, in a sink or swim type situation. He's going to be, coddled on his way through the league so that he can actually have confidence and work on his skills instead of just getting his butt kicked every single night. Because that's what happens to rookies. We saw it last year with Walker Kessler. Even though he had skills that were amazing, where he could, really show up other centers, he was just so new to it that every now and then, those guys would punk him. Like Rudy Gobert, I think it was the second game of the year this last year. Walker Kessler comes into the game, and Rudy Gobert immediately just puts his butt into him, shoves him right underneath the basket, and dunks it right over him. That's something that by the end of the year, Walker Kessler wasn't allowing that to happen. But when you're so new into the league and you're playing against grown men, things like that are going to happen to you just because you don't know the game yet. You don't know just how strong and physical these guys can be. And so it's nice to be able to bring Taylor Hendricks along a little slower, even though, I do think Taylor Hendricks is going to play a lot of minutes this year. He's not immediately being ex or expected to go out there and be, a starting power forward in the NBA at 19 years old. He doesn't hurt floor spacing. John Collins is who we're talking about here. He doesn't hurt the floor spacing. He is a career, I think, 38% shooter from three, has had a lot of years where he shoots around 39. Again, last year he struggled a little bit, but last year altogether was a bit of a struggle for John Collins. He just did not fit well with the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray backcourt and what they were asking him to do there. And I don't think he's a very good fit next to DeAndre Hunter. I think what Lauri Markkanen does really well is going to help John Collins. He's also an underrated defender. John Collins is a very good backside shot blocker, as is Taylor Hendricks. So, with those two playing your power forward minutes, you always have, or Walker Kessler will always have somebody playing next to him that can clean up. So Walker Kessler stops the first action that's coming. If they make a really good pass to the other baseline, instead of giving up a wide open dunk or an easy layup like last year with Kelly Olynyk running the four, you have Taylor Hendricks or John Collins there that can block that shot and really disrupt that offensive player, make things tough on the other team. So I think this is huge for the Jazz. I'm a huge fan of this pickup. Now, there have been a lot of rumors about the Jazz coming into this offseason about trading for Kristaps Porzingis, Tobias Harris, signing one of the power forwards in free agency. Kristaps Porzingis is going to the Celtics. And now that they have John Collins, I'm pretty sure they are completely out of the Tobias Harris discussions because they just don't need another power forward on the roster. And the other power forwards of free agency, again, they're out of those discussions too. So they're going to be able to put any other assets or cap space that they were looking to use towards other parts of the team. And so that's what we'll talk about here in section three. So now that the Jazz have added these three rookies and John Collins, what's the plan for this free agency period and this offseason? I believe that the Jazz are going to try and make the playoffs this year. Now, are they going to really go all in and try and win a title and all that and trade away all their picks and to go and get these, you know, superstar players? I don't think that's happening. I think they may possibly send out a couple of their first if they could get the right guy. But I think they're going to try and make the playoffs without, you know, without burning all out, you know, all their ammo that they have and build upon that. So some major things that the Jazz need to figure out this offseason. Jordan Clarkson, is a free agent. Are they going to bring him back? He's an unrestricted free agent, so they could offer him the world. And if he doesn't want to come back, then he doesn't have to come back. I do believe that Jordan Clarkson likes being with the Jazz. I think he really likes being in Utah. And if they give him enough money to where he feels respected, you know, I think there's a good chance that he comes back and is the starting shooting guard this next year. Talen Horton Tucker has a player option, and I haven't seen anything yet on whether he's going to pick that up or not. If he picks it up, then he's on the Jazz for, well, he's under contract for one more year. If he declines it, he becomes a free agent immediately. I kind of think it's in his best interest to pick it up because there's just not going to be that big of opportunities for him in free agency, I don't believe. And, you know, Will Hardy has figured out how to play really well with Talen Horton Tucker. The other was Rudy Gay, but now he's with the Hawks, so that doesn't matter. So one thing I brought up when I was talking about Keyonte George is that the Jazz have a bit of a logjam at the guard position. If you bring Clarkson back, you bring Talen Horton Tucker back, you still have Colin Sexton, you have Ochai Agbaji, you brought in Chris Dunn last year, and then now you have Keyonte George and Bryce Sensabaugh, and Johnny Juzang is coming off of a two-way contract, and he looks like a guy that could earn an NBA contract as well as a 2-3. There's just a big logjam going on right there. And that's the position where I think the Jazz could possibly use first-round picks and some of these players and really make a big push. You know, if they bring Jordan Clarkson back, let's say it's a four-year, $80 million, so $20 million per year, you bring him back, the Jazz would have roughly $9 million in cap space left after doing that. The guy that I would love to see them go after is Jrue Holiday. I think Jrue Holiday would be such a perfect fit with what the Jazz already have. I think he's still in his prime, and he's not so much older than the rest of the group that they that he'll, you know, be aged out in a year or two. But at the same time, he also could be part of a big push. You build up the new guys, and then when you're ready to move on from Jrue Holiday, you have new guys step in, the young guys step in for the next timeline, basically. Now, I don't know if the Bucks are willing to trade Jrue Holiday, but I would at least ask. If you offered them Colin Sexton, Talen Horton Tucker, and three of your first-round picks, what would the Bucks say? My inclination is that they would say no, but you got to at least ask. And I'd be willing to go up to a fourth first round pick as well, just because I think Jrue Holiday is so awesome. I think you need to have the same discussions with the Bulls about Zach LaVine. You could look into the Damian Lillard trade. I just he's just gonna be so expensive on the last few years of that deal. Other options that the Jazz could look into where you clear some room at the guard position. The one that I keep coming up to is Gordon Hayward with the Hornets. Gordon Hayward played the first, what would that be, 7 years of his career with the Jazz. Was on his way to being, one of the best Jazz men of all time, probably getting his jersey retired and all that. And in free agency, it was down to two teams, the Jazz and the Celtics. The Celtics, who were run then by Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge, the now GM or president of basketball operations or whatever he is for the Jazz. Gordon Hayward is on has 1 year left on his deal at $31.5 million. I think that you bring him in, you just make him Lauri Markkanen's backup at the small forward position. He can come off the bench, put up points, grab rebounds, pass the ball, and get himself healthy and be able to go into free agency next year and sign hopefully one last good sized contract before he, heads out for his career. The thing that I do that I really like though about the possibility of trading for Gordon Hayward is I think you could get an asset back from the Hornets for taking on that contract and for the players we send out. So if you sent Colin Sexton and Talen Horton-Tucker to the Hornets, I think you could get Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words. I think you could get Gordon Hayward and a first round pick to add to your cache of picks that you already have. Maybe it's not a first, maybe it's Gordon Hayward and like 3 second round picks. It still is adding assets to the team. Now all of a sudden you open up room, you have Jordan Clarkson as your starting two. Ochai Agbaji has a bigger role, an easier time of getting to the onto the court. It opens up time for Chris Dunn. It opens up time for Keontae George. But right now, what I want to do before I end this episode is basically give you a depth chart of what the Jazz look like today. Just so you have an idea of what the Jazz have on this roster before we head into free agency, and possibly more trades for the Jazz. So starting center, you have Walker Kessler. I think the backup center currently is Kelly Olynyk, and then you have Damian Jones. Starting power forward is John Collins, followed by Taylor Hendricks and Luka Samanich. At small forward, you have Lauri Markkanen, Simone Fontecchio, and Bryce Sensabaugh. At shooting guard, he's a free agent, but you can bring him back. Jordan Clarkson, Colin Sexton, Ochai Agbaji. At point guard, currently the starter is probably Talen Horton-Tucker, followed by Chris Dunn and Keontae George. So the Jazz already have a full 15-man roster. Like they could just be done today, bring this roster back. You have Johnny Juzang and Micah Potter on two ways. Oh, also the Jazz signed Ben Hauser, super senior out of Michigan State. That is Sam Hauser, who plays for the Celtics, little brother. 6'9" guy that can just really shoot the ball, shot 46% from three at Michigan State. He's big, but he's unathletic. Jazz are just basically taking a chance on him. So they already have 15 roster spots, 3 two-ways. You still even have Vernon Carey Jr., who they signed basically for the for training camp this year. The Jazz, if they wanted to, like, they're done. But I believe there's a lot more coming for the Jazz. I think there's going to be an attempt to clear the logjam at the guard position, and there's possibly a move involving Kelly Olynyk. But with that, I'm going to go ahead and end today's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great day, and go Jazz!